Alrighty, gang. Here's to nights that turn into mornings and friends that turn into family. Cheers!
Happy birthday to you!
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Friendship IRL podcast. I'm your host, Alex Alexander. My friends, they would tell you, I like to ask the hard questions. You know who I am in the group. I'm the person that's saying, okay, I'm going to ask this question, but don't feel like you have to answer it. And now I can be that friend for you too. I am so excited that you're here, Allie. And I mean, if I'm being honest, when your guest inquiry showed up in my inbox, I could not have said yes to having you on the podcast faster. This is like exactly the kind of conversation I want to have on here. And these are never the easiest conversations to have. But as I mentioned to you, I've mentioned on the podcast, I'm no stranger to grief. My mom passed when I was 13. This is like the club that nobody wants to be a part of, losing someone so close to you. So I'm really excited to talk to you today about showing up for other people in grief and how we can all do better in supporting our loved ones. I'm going to ask basically like, this is the worst question. Wow. People that haven't lost a loved one, I think we're nuts.
Yeah.
Because the thing I'm going to ask you is like, why are you the person to talk about this kind of question? And the answer is sad, which is that you lost someone. You want to tell us a little bit about your loss?
So first of all, thank you for having me. When I found your podcast, I was so grateful that there is this resource out there for people, that you are helping people really create chosen families, which I think is some really powerful stuff. But I ended up here because my husband, the love of my life, the person that I thought I was going to spend the rest of my life with, died in a hiking accident at the end of November 2019. Mm. He was 29, I was 30, and I was thrown into the world of grief without any tools or yeah. understanding of what it is like to live with a life-changing loss.
I mean, every person that joins this club for the first time, I mean, is never prepared. And as I'm sure we will talk about in this episode, it makes us look at everything we've ever previously done and be like, oh, that was terrible.
100%. All the mistakes I had made in a grief support role flash before my eyes.
And I mean, I've had this debate. This is like, again, a debate that no one that hasn't lost someone is going to ever have. But, you know, it's like the, is it worse to lose someone suddenly or to watch them pass slowly? Like, it's all terrible. It's all terrible. Yep. It has its own grief journey, whether you're grieving before the loss actually happens, like the milestone, I guess, what everyone else is going to see is the loss.
Hmm.
Or suddenly, and yours was definitely in that suddenly camp.
Yes.
Like people were scrambling, I'm sure, to try and figure out how to help you.
100%.
I have warned you all before that when I do these interviews, a million things are running through my mind at once. And it's so hard. I don't want to totally derail the conversation, hence me popping in like this. But I want to explain where I was going here. As somebody who has experienced quite a bit of loss, but also somebody who has supported a number of people through loss, it's all terrible. It's all terrible. But if you are the person helping and it's a slow loss, somebody has an illness and you can prepare yourself, it gives the support system, the people, some time to set up structures, to create conversation around who is going to fill what role friend or loved one, what all of our strengths are, what time we have, can we fly in? Like, you can have all this conversation, set stuff up. If it's a sudden loss, people scramble. And when there's the sudden loss, yes, the people, the bereaved, need support right away. But as we cover later in this episode, like, the grief journey never ends. You don't need to do it all right away. That's where my brain was going. It quite often, you know, seems like you just need to jump in and do it all. And then if you do it, you know, maybe it'll not be a thing you have to worry about helping your friend with in a few months, but that's not the case. So if you're overwhelmed, it's okay to take a pause for a second and try and organize your thoughts and try and think of who the best person is instead of feeling like you have to jump in and do all the things.
And if you know anything about trauma responses, there are a number of ways your body can react in those moments. I myself identified that I am a person who fawns in a crisis. I was very aware of everything that the people around me were feeling, and I didn't feel a thing, which brings me to why I reached out to you, why I created the resource that I did, was that I could see the fear and the just all the unknown in the people around me and them struggling to find the right words to show up to. Do I cry? Do I not cry? She's not crying. Oh no, like, I'm doing something wrong. I think it's really important for people to have something to help them navigate that, which is why I wrote a book.
You want to know? It's right here. Oh, it's here.
You arrived. Amazing.
Oh yeah. For anybody that can't see it, I am holding up the book in front of my face on this podcast recording. Oh yeah. It arrives in like 24 hours via Amazon. So beautiful. If anybody wants this book by the end of the podcast, you could have it very quickly. The thing is, when I think about the various times I've seen someone, whether I've been the person grieving or I have been there for someone who's grieving, people that have never experienced it before are just completely lost. They have no clue what to do. They're so concerned about doing it wrong. And people that have done it before, like, it's just so different every time.
Yeah.
So you're trying to figure out what's similar and what's different. So much is still going to be different that you're still terrified.
Yeah.
And all you want to do is help, I mean, everybody, but the person closest to the person who's lost someone or people.
Right. I think that's a really important point to drive home, is that, like, all grief is different. And the way everybody grieves is very different. And the type of loss depends on how you can grieve too. So whether you have experience with grief yourself or with supporting someone that you care about, the best thing that you can do when you go into a situation where you want to show up and be helpful to someone is kind of forget all that.
Yeah.
Really, the only thing that's going to be relatable is the courage that you need to really be in that situation.
You have to be so present.
Yes.
So present. And so, like, willing to take part in the emotional labor of wading through it, sitting in the discomfort, dealing with the unknown.
Yeah. And it takes a special skill set to be able to do that, right? It's not something that we are innately born with. And I think a lot of that is a matter of practicing it in our daily lives, in the friendships that we have with the people around us. Being willing to be vulnerable in those situations is a great practice to prepare us for when things go bad, when people die.
I think that's a great point, right? You know, as we both know, having experienced this, you already mentioned, like, grief, the way everybody expresses their grief is different. And the other thing is that grief is never over. This isn't just like a moment in time. Somebody's like me, for example, I lost my mom, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but almost 20 years ago. And I still have moments of grief. Mm. So, well, I think a lot of people think that they need to like be prepared for someone that's closest to them to lose someone to read this book. I still have friends 20 years later who have to sit with me in grief sometimes or like account for that, I guess, in our interactions. And they weren't around 20 years ago to be those number one first responder people. So what you're saying with the friends and the practicing, like we can be practicing this instead of shying away from it in all our interactions.
Absolutely. You're so right that grief does not end. And I kind of adopted the mindset that I will always feel something. Mm-hmm. So when it comes up, it's kind of like a permission and allowance to be like, okay, there it is. Hey, grief, welcome back. We were on a good roll there, but okay, you're welcome here now. Grief, like at its core, is just a change in attachment. And as human beings, we are wired to attach to people, to places, to things, to ideas. So there's so much more grief in life than we really give attention to. Yes, oh, yeah. There are losses that we have integrated into our lives and a grief that kind of gets built into the way we operate as a human. But there are also moments like divorce, changes in relationships, when people become parents, changes in jobs, moving to new cities, moving from the house where you live. There are so many moments where grief exists that we really don't pay attention to, and we just label as something else. We just label it as like, oh, I'm feeling sad today. And yes, you might be feeling sad today, but the origin of that sadness is this energetic grief that's created because you're changing how you're attached to a person, place, thing, or idea.
You're so right. I mean, we're coming at this fundamentally, initially, from the loss of a very close loved one, like me, my mom, you, your husband. But I do talk about this on the podcast a lot. Like when friendships change is a great example. Even when, like, if friends have a baby, the way our friendship works, the ability to just call each other and go out without having to deal with a sitter, like that is a friendship change that we have to grieve. New parents and their loss of freedom, they're grieving. We're grieving. That's going to happen again someday when those kids move out from home. People become empty nesters. They're grieving. Like we are literally walking through all of our relationships with people very likely grieving one thing or another somewhere on the spectrum all the time.
Exactly.
And no one's really talking about it. No one's really acknowledging it unless it's like a massive grief normally, like the actual loss of a loved one or the loss of like a big career path or goal or a life stage or a breakup. Like those get a little bit of, I guess, like leeway or attention that somebody's grieving, and the rest of them really don't.
No, they don't. Which is funny because if, you know, we, going back to this like fundamental way that like we're looking at grief, like we're always going to feel something. If we become parents, like we're always going to look back at our life and be like, oh, I wonder what would have happened if I, you know, hadn't had children.
Yeah.
These like kind of like before and after images, like all throughout our life. And yet we don't talk about it. And I think part of that is, you know, we've become accustomed to a culture where everything is individualized and, you know, we're supposed to take care of ourselves, have bubble bath, everything will feel better.
Self-care is a scam. Yeah.
And I mean, like, if you're in a grief support role, I'm not like, there is a chapter in the book that talks about self-care. Like, you have to have an awareness. You have to have an ability to have your needs met. But there is just a level of community care that we really need to be showing up for each other and in our losses with our grief so that we can continue to have the big, full lives and not have to like close off parts of ourselves so that we can continue to fit in with the people that we have chosen to be around us as we move through life.
Just to clarify, when I say self-care is a scam, I mean like the commercialized self-care.
Totally, I get it.
like, yes, we still need to take care of ourselves, but it is, like you were saying, not bubble baths, not nail appointments necessarily. Like, there's a deeper underlying fundamental need of that. And quite often it also is things like getting your finances in order. We've already covered this on the podcast, but I'm just saying.
Go back and listen to that episode.
Yeah. Episode 13. Community care, you're so right, is really lost from the conversation. We're not talking about it. And we're really sold this idea that we are successful if we can self-care our way out of it.
Yeah. Oh, that's a beautiful phrase.
And the truth is, sure, we might be able to self-care our way out of it. We also might have to put in so much energy to do that that we have to forego all the other areas of our life. And if we can't, we feel like a failure, when in reality, we really could have just leaned on someone and it's their strength or they can help us. And suddenly, instead of using literally all of our energy to get out of whatever this situation is, like, it could have been 10 times faster because we asked for help, because that's not our strength, or just because we need an extra hand.
Yeah. If you're showing up for someone that you care about who is grieving, it's like a team sport. And because grief lasts forever, it is also an endurance sport. So the reality is that you also can't do it on your own. That person can't grieve like in a box in isolation, and they need more than just like their one best friend to like be everything and do everything. Mm-hmm. So that self-care, that self-awareness becomes very important, but also what you like mentioned is like playing to their strengths. Mm-hmm. So if they're the person who is a really great listener, they're super empathetic, they are willing to be present and sit with someone, that's great. But you don't have to do the like the shopping and the cleaning and the walking the dog. Yep. Like all the other like things that get put out as options for someone when you are looking for information about how to help. So yeah. Play to your strengths, play to your assets.
And I think too that some of those less vulnerable tasks, I mean, I get that it's vulnerable to ask and offer help, but sometimes I think those are really tasks, like maybe somebody close to you is the organizer, the person who figures out what you need, asks you all that kind of stuff, and then puts it out to your wider circle, because so many people want to contribute in some way or another, especially if it's something that plays to their strengths. They're already doing, you know, like they're already going to the store, they're happy to pick up your groceries and drop them by. That is so easy for somebody to do, even someone that you feel like is just an acquaintance.
Absolutely.
Which is all just to say that I truly think we have more people than we realize. And actually, one of the moments where we truly take that in is in our lowest of lows, like when somebody passes, when some massive life thing happens, which is unfortunate because that's also the moment where we're so low, it's like hard to ask for that help. Hard to be vulnerable. Like if we realize that before these moments, I think it would be easier to allow a broader circle to show up in small ways.
Mm. No, that's so true. You're so right that often when something terrible happens, there are people who are asking the questions of what do I do and how do I help? I remember people, you know, dropping off that I'd spent very little time with who came by, didn't say hi, literally like just left like a little package and a note like at the door. And it's true. There are more people around you that want to help. I also think it's like, it's okay if you are someone who wants to reach out and support someone, like there is no wrong time to reach out and offer your support and condolences and to be willing to be leaned on. Because as we mentioned, you know, grief never ends.
Yeah. Don't feel like you're too late.
Exactly. Like yeah. Don't feel like you missed your opportunity.
Yes.
Exactly. And it's actually like a huge gift to, you know, come in when other people and kind of interest has moved into other things to be like, hey, I'm just checking on you. I realize that this is still something that's probably quite present in your life. And I want to be helpful to you.
Yeah.
Also just like asking to talk about the person who died. I don't know how you feel, Alex, but I like people who ask me about Will and like, you know, what would he think of like what's happening and things today or whatever, like that is such a gift. And in a way, like that is helpful to me that I'm not the one who continually has to bring him up in conversation. And it's kind of like giving me permission in conversation to like weave him into it and build new memories and ideas with his presence.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. So often we feel like when people are past relationships, and I normally talk about this with like friendships we've moved on from, but I mean, it just applies here too, that we think like they're gone. And I talk about this idea of friendships, relationships being like a tree, like you grow roots. If you pull the roots out of the soil, out of the pot, roots are still in there. They're still there. We still have our memories. We still have like the beliefs that our loved ones, like they loved us, we loved them. We still have all this stuff. It doesn't go away. And sometimes I feel like when relationships end, whether it's because we've chosen to move on from something like a friendship or we've lost these very important people to us, it's nice. You're correct. Like it's nice to have people acknowledge that that stuff is still there. And it's never going to go away.
No. And it's not just the memories themselves, right? I think about all these moments that I have like day to day where like, oh, that reminds me of Will. Mm-hmm. Or like there's a character from this TV show that like we watched together and now they're on this TV show that I only watched by myself and Will hated. But now it's like these moments come back together and I'm like, oh, Will would love this. But if nobody's like talking to me about Will, they would never know that these two shows have a very like, this is just like basic stuff, but they would never know the like sentimental value that those TV shows like hold in my heart, probably much more than like the average person feels about these like TV show characters. Those moments build on each other. And it's kind of how we maintain relationships with people who have died. And research shows that it's like continuing bonds theory. Like if we maintain a connection with people we love after they have died, it's actually better for our nervous systems. We cope better. We adapt better to a life without them. So I think it's important when you're talking about showing up for someone that you want to be helpful to, like you can't make it worse by bringing up the person who has died. And I think a lot of people fall into the trap that like, if I bring them up, it's going to cause like more harm, when in fact, that probably couldn't be farther from the truth for many, many people.
I think there's definitely this belief or fear or something that people don't want to be seen in grief. Like if I'm grieving, I don't want anybody to see I'm crying. And sure, but in reality, I think we want people to see how hard this is.
Yeah.
We want people to acknowledge that these people were here, that we all shared in these memories. And what was coming up for me is like, there's people that are the closest to us. Like it's pretty vulnerable to talk about being seen in like the actual loss.
Yeah.
And maybe we're not going to do that with absolutely everyone. But I do think we want people to acknowledge how hard this is or see it, believe it, whatever. And then there's also feeling seen that like this person was real.
Yeah.
We also have memories of this person. This person would like this. That, I think, to the general public, have at it.
Yeah.
Like, that is such a great way to support someone who's grieving, even if you aren't their closest person.
Absolutely. And if that's uncomfortable, it's totally fine to ask permission first.
Yeah.
Be like, hey, would it be okay if I asked how they would feel about this thing? Or like, would it be okay if I asked how you feel about your mom not being here for your birthday or your wedding or all that? We have far more agency, whether we are the griever or the person in a support role, to really see it, as you put it. Yeah. And I also think too, like there's a fear that if they get too close to the pain and the suffering, that they might get sucked in, or like they're afraid to cry if they hear things or, you know, they feel something in those moments. And I think that's another myth to like really hammer home and debunk that, like, if I am telling you a story about Will, about my loss, and you start crying, there is no greater signal to me that you are in the moment mm-hmm. and really listening to what I am saying. Mm-hmm. I would discourage anybody from feeling like they don't want to be put in that position. Like, it just means that you really feel like you have empathy for this person and their story and what they are living through. And that speaks to the fact that we want people to understand that it is hard and it is not easy to exist in a world with the people who we wish were present with us.
Yeah. And I mean, this is like part of that club, a comment. I mean, I'm just going to say it. Like, I think people who haven't been through it kind of shy away, thinking kind of like, well, this has never happened to me, or I'm not part of this. It's going to happen to all of us. Everybody is going to lose somebody. You know, you already have probably those smaller moments of grief, whether you're acknowledging them or not. This is going to happen to everybody. So just because it hasn't happened to you yet doesn't mean you'll never understand how this feels. You can't run from it. This is one of those things that you can sit there and just say, like, well, you know, hopefully this never happens to me or anybody I love. Like, this is going to happen to everybody.
It's one of the few guarantees in life that it ends.
So whether you feel it now or later on some smaller scale, like, you're going to feel it. I don't know. Grief, man. All right. We're just trying to teach everybody how to grieve, the culture that doesn't know how. It's fine. Everybody's fine.
You know what? It's like a long time ago, not a long time, a long time ago, like I'm, you know, some old wise woman, but you know, it used to be like very taboo to talk about sex. Mm-hmm. And now we can talk about it freely in almost any platform, anywhere. And I feel like as though, you know, grief and death and dying and loss, like, might be the new frontier. And maybe, I don't know how people started the sex revolution of like talking about it in public spaces, but I think it starts with people being willing to do that. So here we are.
I mean, I agree. There's plenty of subjects that are hiding, that aren't getting enough conversation in a public forum. Because I can guarantee you that people like us who have experienced a great loss, I mean, we're talking about this, which is why I say that, you know, certain people who haven't experienced it are going to think certain things I say are like heartless. But when you've experienced it, you have to find some form of like humor or familiarity or connection about the awfulness. Like, it's just there. So these conversations are happening.
Yes. And to be like quite frank, if we like circle back to the book, I remember sitting in it was a grief workshop shortly after Will died. And the facilitator, in her opening statements, said, you know, thank you all for being here. It's really courageous work for you to show up and want to work through your grief. And once you have, then you can support others because you will be wise. I'm paraphrasing, but that was like her mission. And I remember sitting in that session and I was like, excuse me? I'm like, I just lost the most important person in the world to me. And you're telling me that the only reason that I should make myself okay again is so that I can help other people who have to also live with this pain? I'm like, that's not fair. Like, where are the people who aren't feeling this pain right now? And that's kind of the message that I got very early on, is like, go find community, go find people like you. And I'm like, why aren't people being accepted within their own networks? They are still a person who has relationships and robust relationships. Why aren't we accommodating them within their existing support networks? Because this is such a real fact of life.
Yep.
And if every time you experience like new grief or a shift in attachment, you have to like go find a whole new group of friends and family, like, what kind of life is that?
And then go make these connections in your lowest moment.
Yeah.
Like, add this additional work.
Right.
At that time. And that's not to say that it's not helpful to find people who have a similar sense of understanding, but like, I totally agree with you.
Yeah. And I think that's why we really connected off the bat is, you know, like your mission of like having this circle of people around you is like the best kind of self-care that you can have, mm-hmm. the best kind of community care that you can have, this chosen family of people who are willing to accept you as you grow and adapt and change and like integrate all that you learn from whatever experiences you have in life. You can stay within that safe group of people and know that you will always be loved and empowered and respected. And that's kind of like my dream.
I mean, building that community in the lowest of low. When you were talking about the grief workshop you went to and the woman was like, I commend you on your courage. My brain just like exploded because I'm like, the courage?
Yeah.
Screw you, lady. I don't know who this person is. She listens to my podcast. It's fun. I would say it to her face. Like the courage, you're at rock bottom. You're at rock bottom. And that's the thing. I built my support system because I had no other option. I had no other option. I was literally a child when I started doing it. I didn't know what I was doing. I did it because it was either be utterly alone as in like literally no parents to depend on. Nothing, like rock bottom people, or figure it out and get creative and build something that felt right. And that's the thing about me, I think that's interesting, is I had no other option. When your back is up against the wall, when you're that desperate, you'll be creative, you'll take risks. I didn't even know what I was doing because I literally didn't realize I had any other option. And now I want to create this podcast, my book, all the things, because I don't want anybody to be that rock bottom. I don't want people to have to be where I was to build a support system for themselves. Somebody told me once, like if I could sum up your entire mission in one sentence, it would be don't put all your eggs in one basket. Because I think what a lot of people do is they find a romantic partner and a couple of friends. And then I think about if something profound happened, like that partner died, they don't have a diverse support system. Everything falls on a few people. That's a lot of weight. So then they might be where I am and trying to rebuild. And that's so much work. And people will do it. People will do it like me and be so desperate and do it. But like, that's not how we should be setting our lives up.
No, absolutely not. That's the complete opposite of what our species is really meant to do, right? We are supposed to exist in community so we can depend on each other and help each other in moments when someone's like, hey, I'm down, and everybody else is like, no problem. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got you.
And I've given this advice or commentary, whatever, which is to like go find people who have similar experiences. And I do believe that in a lot of cases. But when you and I talked earlier, you talked about how you went to find support groups and did not feel aligned. And the thing is, like, no matter what, those support groups, although they could fill a very specific niche if you had found ones that were good or that aligned with you, maybe that's a better way to put it, they weren't going to be able to do it all. You still needed your existing people to step up in one way or another. Again, you can't put all your eggs in one basket. But like, you didn't find what you needed in the groups.
Absolutely not. And in fact, I couldn't relate to what my widowed peers were experiencing, because so much of the conversation was revolving around how they felt abandoned and misunderstood and forgotten by the people who were around them before they lost their loved one. And my experience was the opposite. And really why I wrote the book is that my team, my front row, I call them, like they were there from day one saying, hey, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, but I love you and I'm not going to let you like, you are not going to face this alone. Like, I am here. I will make mistakes. I am not going away. That's been so powerful. And I credit that front row to their support has gotten me to where I am today. I would not have been able to adapt without the social support, like social support after trauma, after loss, in loss is everything. And the better your social support is in those moments, the better off you're going to be later on. So as you put it, like, build these systems early, build your network early, build your circle early. You don't want to end up in a desperate situation where you're going it alone.
When we say that, like, certain people are like, so I should think about if my parent dies or my partner dies, finding friends who, like, no, just go find people who connect with about the various parts of your life, who you can start to let in to your life. Like, they can be in your home when it's messy, because guess what? When you're grieving, your home's going to be messy. People you can
super messy.
And like, suddenly you're going to be like, oh my God, I've never let them in my home. Just let them in now. Let them in now. Hang out in your sweatpants with no makeup on. Cook together. Like, do parts of life. It doesn't need to be everything. It doesn't need to be one person. Just like, start letting people in. This is my theory, because then in the harder moments, you're not having to rip those vulnerability band-aids off as well. Like, they're already seeing parts of your life. They know certain kinds of food you like because they've seen the inside of your fridge. They could be the friend that, even if they're not your closest friend, when trying to figure out what to buy you at the grocery store, they could be like, oh, I've gone over there and cooked dinner. I know what she likes to buy. I can go and pick up some of the things I remember seeing in there.
Yeah, that's such great advice, Alex.
Like, I think for these big pivotal things, when you're thinking about building your support system, it's just finding people that you connect with about other parts of life and letting them in. Because people naturally want to help in these hard moments.
They do.
What do you think? I mean, we've talked about your front row. Do you have any like actual examples of things that your front row did that you feel like were really impactful?
I can give a couple examples. I'm a teeth clencher. So I have a physiotherapist that I have been seeing for years. And after Will died, I brought a friend with me to my physio appointment. So I didn't have to say out loud what was happening, what had happened to me. That wasn't the intention when I brought the friend along physio. The word, I just want you with me. Yeah. You feel good with me.
Yeah.
But as we're like in the treatment room and my therapist came in and she's like, hey, like, how's it going? And I just like, my face was like I couldn't say it. And then my best friend, Sarah, was like, do you want me to tell her? And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
She told the story for me, which was super helpful. Later on, other examples, I have friends who have a guest room that is practically mine. And being a person who is bereaved and lives alone, I got a dog to like help me with my loneliness. Yeah. Also in school, like, I have a lot of responsibility in my life. And just sometimes that catches up with me. They willingly, like, I just tell them, be like, hey, can I come to your house this weekend? And they're like, absolutely. And I literally like walk in the door and I sleep and they take my dog on runs with them. They feed me. Like, they have no expectations that like I have to contribute. Yeah. And I live in their space and they take care of me, which is really beautiful. And, you know, I'm 3 years beyond Will's death at this point and they still let me do that. So, you know, there's really no timelines for it. Another example. So Christmas has not been something that I
really partake in. Yeah, holidays are so
hard. Yeah, and just the forced be merry and jolly, and I'm just like, no. So I've opted out of Christmas the past few years, and I have a few friends who have just, we've created our own holiday.
Yeah.
And they respect why I want to do that, and they're like, yes, like, I fully support you. Like, how do we show up on this date? How do we make the best out of this? And it started out with just one friend, and now there's two. And then this year, someone actually just brought me a gift being like, I don't know if this is the right, I'm not going to say the name of the holiday because it's quite vulgar. So it's celebrated around Christmas time, but it's, you can just show up in your pajamas and be grouchy and it's fine.
I love it.
Yeah. So someone gifted me something this year and they're like, I don't know if you give gifts, but here's some rum. It's like, yeah, that seems appropriate. Cool. But just like, come on this journey with me of like building a new holiday around the emotions that I experience this time of year.
What a beautiful way to be like seen though, and how much this time of year sucks.
Yes.
For you.
I've also gotten fuck Christmas cards from a friend.
I've sent those.
Yeah. It's beautiful, right? It's like little things to acknowledge your reality and that it might be different than the mainstream. Is lovely.
Allie's examples reminded me of a couple similar ones. So, you know, she mentioned going to the physio appointment and her friend being the one that's able to say out loud, they've died. I have offered friends before to like be the person that notifies other friends to call people. Now, obviously, I'm asking permission. I would never share that information. But if you've lost someone close to you, you know that sometimes in the beginning, especially, it's hard to say out loud. And having somebody else do that for you is sometimes helpful. Another one is, you know, she was talking about people allowing her to just be in their space with them. And we're obviously talking about a loss here, but we've done this with so many friends after really big life changes, breakups, divorces. When friends are panicked about finding a new place to live, moving, giving them a space that feels comfortable, letting them stay in our guest room for an extended period of time so they don't have to scramble to do that and they can take their time to really find somewhere they're excited to be, I think can be really impactful. I mean, one of the things I think about a lot is that there are two sets of emotions existing at all times, right? Mm. Especially with two people. So these catastrophic life events happen. Then other people around you are having happy things. And like you're happy for them, but also grieving. Do you have any thoughts about like navigating as a friend the duality after something like that? This just keeps coming up. People keep asking me about this.
As the person who is bereaved or as the friend? Yeah. As a bereaved, early on, I got very jealous quite often.
Yeah.
Because, you know, all my peers, all my best friends were like getting married and having babies. And I'm like, still dead. Still sad over here, you know, until I, you know, I just gave in to it. And the reality is like, if I am jealous, I'm not hurting anyone. If I acted on that jealousy and did anything with malicious intent, then that would be bad. But me sitting in bed, having a good cry because somebody else gets something that I wanted and now I can't have, I just give myself space to feel that way because the more I fight it, the longer it lasts. And if I just surrender and say, you know what, I'm going to feel this way and I'm allowed to feel this way, it is just what it is. And I think that's what living with grief is like. You know, it's this reality of recognizing what you had in the past and what your future has to be like and always wanting it to be different.
Yes. Everybody is sitting always with something that they wish was different, whether they picked it or not. Yeah. Like we just have to hold space for that.
Exactly. That's the best thing that you can do is just recognize like, hey, yeah. You know, people talk about acceptance being a big part of grief and just like life and doing the work, right? And I think there is a misconception that acceptance means that you have to it. And you don't. You don't. Acceptance is just like, oh, here's that feeling again. Here's that duality. Here's me, you know, just going to go into the bathroom and cry a little bit at my best friend's wedding because I'm feeling things. And I wish it was my wedding.
I've gotten some pushback on this kind of duality feeling thing. And people have said to me like, well, I think that comes when you're closer to someone, right? Like you could be in the bathroom crying at a wedding and only the people close to you would know why, you know, my closest friends would know why. And I've pushed back and said, no, I don't need to know the reason you are crying in the bathroom, even if I don't know you and I've never met you before. I can just hold space for like something is really hard here. And that's okay. That doesn't take away from the fact that you're happy for your friend. I'm not going to walk out and be like, oh, she is crying and she's not even happy to be here. This is her best friend's day. It's like, can't we just give people a few minutes for the fact that other emotions exist? Now, if I'm your closest friend, yeah, I'm going to walk in and know why. But like this goes to, you don't need to know why. You don't need to know. You just accept that something else is going on here. And the jealousy thing, I think it's so much less about the feeling as it is about the actions that come from it, from yourself, but also other people around you trying to, quite honestly, stir things up sometimes and make it look like there were actions that came from a feeling. There weren't. It was just a feeling. It was there. Hold space for it. Move on. They are not connected. The fact that you need a moment for grief and you're happy for your friend. This needing to know why, I think, is problematic.
I agree. I think it plays into our gossip culture, right? Which is we like to talk about people and not to people. So much of what is said behind people's backs. And this is just purely from my personal opinion.
I mean, everything on this podcast is personal opinion. That's the whole point of this thing.
You know, I think people are so much more comfortable asking about someone from someone else than they are asking a person.
Well, if they ask the person, they'd get the real answer.
Well, exactly.
And if they ask somebody else, then they can continue to speculate.
Exactly.
Like that's the thing. It's the difference of if I walk in and find you crying and I walk out and say to someone, it's like the facts. Allie's in the bathroom crying. She seems really upset. We should give her a minute. That is facts. Now, me walking out and being like, oh, Allie's in there crying. She's not happy to be here. She's really ruining this moment. You have now like conflated this entire thing. Stick to the facts. And if you want to hear more, ask you. Or maybe ask your closest friend, like, has today been hard for her? Yes. Okay, well, now we know.
Right.
Like, I don't think asking some facts, but yeah, I get so many messages about this conflated, like the duality of feelings. As if you showing up to a wedding, you should only have positive feelings, that like none of your feelings should exist. And I think it's so problematic. We're not allowing any space for that grief or loss on whatever level it is.
Yeah. Or just like a level of like humanness. Like what if like that person got some really bad news or got into a fight with their partner before showing up at this event? So they're a little bit grumpy. They're a little put off. They really don't want to sit with like the person that they came with because they're really turned off by them. Like we experience so much as human beings that if you're not willing to accept people as humans, that just seems really unfair to me to like not give people the space to be themselves, to just be.
I mean, it could be as simple as this just popped up to my head. It could be like as simple as going to a bachelorette party and in the midst of the weekend away or whatever it is, you have a moment where you maybe feel a little guilty that you spent that much money on this trip. You're wondering if you should have spent it on something else or if you should have saved it. That is not to say they aren't happy to be there. They just also maybe have some other worries in the background. But if somebody says that, it's like, well, you didn't have to come.
Right.
Like, no, that was not what she was saying.
Yeah.
What she was saying is she's human. More emotions exist. She feels more things. That's okay. There's so many things happening with so many people. And I think that you writing this book is such a helpful tool for anybody at any time. Because as we already talked about, everybody's going through loss in one way, shape, or form. And most people are going to see your book and think, oh, well, it's good to know I could buy that if my friend's spouse ever passed away. File that away. I can just search grief on Amazon and like, I'm sure it'll pop up at some point. But the thing is, we could all just spend some time reflecting on kind of like how we build this muscle.
Yes.
In these smaller interactions. And that's going to help when the big moments do happen.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, if you're in a situation where something has happened and you pick up the book, like it'll help you in that moment, but it will also help you, like, instead of being the person who stays quiet and worried that they're going to screw up so they keep their distance, like you are more likely to lose your friend than getting close and making mistakes. The closer you are, the more willing you are to show up for that person, like the more likely it is that you're going to be in each other's lives down the road. And that means that you get to be there for like the big, exciting, good things too, which I think is really beautiful.
Truly, people should go out. I will link the book in the show notes. Keep it around. Add it to your list on Amazon. Read it now. It's a very doable read.
Yes.
It's, how many pages is it? 115-ish? 120? 120. Like, I was able to read it pretty fast, which I'm only saying because if you are in a moment where you really need it and you're like, cool, add a book to my to-do list plus helping a friend, you really could get through it in a decent amount of time. It's a very good size.
I did that intentionally so that if folks are reading it in a moment of crisis, that it was digestible for a nervous system that was dysregulated. It's also available as an audiobook. And an ebook if that's how you want to consume your stuff, but all sorts of ways to digest the information depending on how you're doing that day and what's happening in your life.
Well, Allie, thank you so much for reaching out, for being on the podcast. I can't wait to see what people say about this one.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me, Alex.
I come up with an outline before I record these episodes, but I try not to control where they go because I just think so many beautiful things come out of the organic conversation. When I planned to record this with Allie, I really intended to talk about that specific, like losing one person. And this turned into such a beautiful conversation about how we are accepting our friends and our community and our people and our loved ones as they become new versions of themselves that they didn't choose. Because that's the thing after grief. You're a new person forever. Like, I am always the girl whose mom died. Even if it isn't overwhelming to me daily like it was when I first lost her, that's still who I am. There's still moments where my friends have to accommodate that or allow me to show up in a bad mood or have a moment. Like, it's always there. They can't get away from it. And I just walked away from this conversation feeling so grateful because I talk a lot about when our friends choose something and having to accept that. But there are so many things we aren't choosing that are changing us all as people. If you are somebody who's had one of those changes and you want to talk about it, reach out. This is the place to do it. Thank you for listening to this episode of Friendship IRL. I am so honored to have these conversations with you, but don't let the chat die here. Send me a voice message. I created a special website just to chat with you. You can find it at alexalex.chat. You can also find me on Instagram. My handle at @itsalexalexander. Or go ahead and leave a review wherever you prefer to listen to podcasts. Now, if you want to take this conversation a step further, send this episode to a friend. Tell them you found it interesting and use what we just talked about as a conversation starter the next time you and your friend hang out. No need for a teary goodbye. I'll be back with a new episode next week.